Today is Tuesday, June 1st, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinua Adofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden warns of danger to America's democracy.
What we do now, how we honor the memory of the fallen, will determine whether or not democracy will long endure.
Plus, a man in China contracts first human case of bird flu strain.
An NHC statement says this infection is an accidental cross-species transmission.
Also, WHO marks World No Tobacco Day. Our top story today is in the U.S. U.S. President Joe Biden used his Memorial Day speech on Monday to defend America's, quote, imperfect, unquote, democracy, calling for more work to deliver the promises of what he said remained, quote, the greatest experiment, unquote, in world history. In a speech at Arlington National Cemetery touching on voting rights, freedom of speech, and efforts to rectify persistent economic and racial disparities, Biden warned that democracy was, quote, in peril, unquote, in the United States and around the world in the face of autocratic forces he did not identify.
The soul of America is animated by the perennial battle between our worst instincts, which we've seen of late, and our better angels, between me first and we the people. These Americans weren't fighting for dictators. They were fighting for democracy. They weren't fighting to exclude or to enslave. They were fighting to build and broaden and liberate. Democracy is more than a form of government. It's a way of being. It's a way of seeing the world. Democracy means the rule of the people, not the rule of monarchs, not the rule of the moneyed, not the rule of the mighty. Our troops have fought this battle on fields around the world, but also the battle of our time. And the mission falls to each of us, each and every day. Democracy itself is in peril here at home and around the world. What we do now, how we honor the memory of the fallen, will determine whether or not democracy will long endure.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden. On Tuesday, Biden goes to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to mark the 100th anniversary of the worst race massacre in U.S. history. Hundreds of black Americans died when white residents of the city attacked and burned their community. Hamas's top leader in the Gaza Strip has expressed optimism about reaching a prisoner exchange with Israel. The remarks came as Egyptian mediators were working to hammer out a long-term ceasefire following an 11-day conflict in the Gaza Strip. To get all the details about the discussions taking place and more, International Edition Steve Miller spoke with reporter Oli Halpern in Jerusalem.
The head of Hamas in Gaza, Yahya Sinwar, said that he was willing to discuss the issue with Israel of returning the Israeli captives that are in Gaza. So from the point of view of Hamas, this is only possible if it is not connected to the other issues. In other words, Hamas does not want to negotiate a return over these Israeli citizens in exchange for the reconstruction in Gaza. Issues are related to Gaza. They want to discuss the issue of the captives in exchange for Palestinians who are in Israeli prisons. So they want to make that separate. And until now, Israel has not been interested in doing that.
And the other thing that came up on Monday is this other Hamas official who said that if the ceasefire is to continue, Israel needed to stop aggression, not only in Gaza, but within Jerusalem. Can you give us more details on that?
Now Hamas is saying, we want you to not use aggressive police against the people in Jeftura, not to evict those people, not to use a very strong Israeli police presence on the Temple Mount. So it's going back to where we were a few weeks ago. And we'll see how Israel will react. We know that the U.S. administration, the Biden administration, is very keen to have Israel lower its profile on these issues. And Israel is also not interested in reigniting the flame. So it's unlikely that Israel is going to start getting very aggressive on the Temple Mount. And the question remains, what will happen in the neighborhood of those Palestinian families?
On Sunday, it was announced that there may be a possible unity government being formed ahead of the Wednesday midnight deadline. And if that does come to pass, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would find himself out of a job. What are the challenges that remain to more or less seal the deal and finally form a government after 2 years and four elections?
They have until late Wednesday night to go to the president and say, here, these people have signed on. We now have 61 seats, which is the minimum number of seats you have to have out of the 120 to form a coalition. Then after that, it goes to a vote in the Knesset. This gives Netanyahu still some time to try to convince at least one person to break off, one right-wing person to break off in this change government, and then the coalition will fall apart. So people expect him to try to keep pressing for the right-wing members of this coalition to leave at least one. And once it goes for a vote in the Knesset, then that's it, and that is the new government.
That's reporter Oli Harpern speaking with my colleague Steve Miller from Jerusalem. Israelis voiced mixed opinion on Monday after far-right party leader Naftali Bennett threw his crucial support on Sunday behind, quote, unity government, unquote, in Israel to unseat Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in what could be the end of a political era. Bennett's decision, which he announced in a televised address, could enable opposition chief Yair Lapid to put together a coalition of right-wing centralist and leftist parties and hand Netanyahu his first election defeat since 1999. While some Israelis support the move, others saw it as a political betrayal. Jerusalem resident Moshe Han.
So I think it's a very dramatic moment for Israel and politics and for Bennett himself. He's taking a huge gamble. Either he'll succeed and he will be able to steer the government that he's putting together in the towards the right, which is the way he wants to do it, and keep it together and be able to do good things. And then, you know, he'll make history for himself and for Israel. Or he'll fail and it will fall apart very quickly. And then he will probably not be able to be elected because he's lost his support. There are a lot of Bennett supporters that are very disappointed. So we'll see what happens. It'll be very interesting.
That's Jerusalem resident Moshe Han. The Turkish government is facing accusations of arming and funding jihadists in Syria. The allegations are just the latest by mafia boss in a weekly YouTube broadcast. As Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, the allegations are putting the Turkish president in an increasingly tight spot.
That exiled mafia boss set up Peke on YouTube, accusing the government of arming and buying oil from Syrian jihadists. Peke carefully explains how key aides of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan ran the scheme. Peke, who analysts say once enjoyed close ties to Turkey's rulers, started broadcasting weekly Sunday videos on a YouTube channel, alleging government misdeeds after he was forced to flee the country. Analyst Attila Yeşilada says the mafia boss has a growing audience.
It's huge. He is easily attracting audiences in excess of 4 to 5 million per video. And everything he says is scrutinized in the opposition channels. So I would say everyone knows about what he's saying. Obviously, the most damaging is him reopening the 1990 files, you know, the extrajudicial killings.
Peke alleges former Interior Minister Mehmet Ağar was the head of a shadowy organization known as the Deep State, which was responsible for a series of assassinations of prominent journalists dating back to the 1990s. Ağar is closely linked to Erdogan, and his son Tolga is a parliamentary deputy for the ruling AKP, Turkey's ruling party. Ağar has denied the allegations. Erol Önderoğlu of Reporters Without Borders says there is a need for government transparency.
This should be a part of a parliamentary inquiry first. But I think that it will never be possible without Turkish government naming some state actors in these periods. So transparency today should calm the public opinion, to show respect to the family victims.
But Erdogan is dismissing the allegations.
Ülkemizde sağlanan bu huzur ve güven ikliminden duyulan.
Speaking to his deputies, the Turkish president claimed the accusations are part of an international conspiracy to oust him. But Peke's allegations continue, accusing the son of Erdogan's close confidant, former Prime Minister Binali Yildirim, of cocaine smuggling and turning Turkey into one of the biggest hubs for importing and distributing drugs into Europe. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
A man in eastern China has contracted what might be the world's first human case of the H1N9 strain of bird flu but the risks of large-scale spread is low, the government said on Tuesday. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The country's National Health Commission says the man was hospitalised on April 28 and is in a stable condition, adding no human case of the strain has been reported elsewhere. An NHC statement says this infection is an accidental cross-species transmission. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
As fighting in pockets of Ethiopia's Tigray region continues and food supplies dwindle, the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, says the local farmers lack seeds and fertilizer ahead of the planting season and that fears of food shortages are running high. ICPC Economic Security Program team leader Malaika Van Klinken.
After November last year, there was a lot of losses of seeds that we knew about. There's also been a lack of fertilizer arriving in the area. The land here needs fertilizer, so we came and did an assessment, and the first thing people said that they needed was fertilizer and some seeds. So we did an assessment through the villages, through the communities, and registered 12 kabelas, which consist of 3 to 4 villages each, so about 40 villages in total. The assessment consisted of understanding the security situation, understanding whether people had land, understanding whether people had started farming, whether people had started ploughing. These are sort of our criteria for giving the fertilizer and seeds. In these 12 kabelas, 40 villages, people had started already ploughing, so had started preparing land and were desperately looking for fertilizer to be able to start planting. The reaction has been incredibly positive. People have the trauma of the famine of the 80s still very much in their psyche. What they were worried the most as the conflict started and as everything was going on is the lack of being able to produce food. So this has driven them to continue farming, to continue ploughing their lands, and the reaction has been overwhelming. As soon as we're distributing it, we're already seeing people starting to use it, starting to plant the sorghum seeds. Teff seeds will be planted in June. People are prepared.
This is the Voice of America. Pope Francis has changed church law to explicitly criminalize the sexual abuse of adults by priests who abuse their authority. It also says lay people who hold church office can be sanctioned for sex abuse crimes. The new provisions, released Tuesday after 14 years of study, were contained in the revised criminal law section of the Vatican's Code of Canon Law, the in-house legal system that covers the 1.3 billion strong Catholic Church. NATO's foreign and defense ministers will be meeting to lay the groundwork for the military alliance first summit with U.S. President Joe Biden. The ministers will discuss hefty communique being drafted for the June 14 summit in Brussels. The main aim of Tuesday's meeting is to reaffirm the unity of the 30-nation security alliance.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists David Stevenson and Edwin Salpeter are credited with being the first in the 1970s to theorize that raindrops of helium fall within the interiors of Jupiter and Saturn. Other scientists throughout the years have published studies to support those theories. A team of French and U.S. scientists recently conducted experiments that also support the theory of helium rain inside the two gas giants. The scientists are said to have reached their findings by recreating the interiors of the planets in laboratory settings. They detail their findings in a new study that has been published in the journal Nature. The study provides evidence that it is possible for helium rain to fall, considering the predicted span of pressure and temperature environments of Jupiter and Saturn. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. In marking World No Tobacco Day, the World Health Organization is urging smokers to quit their habit, warning they are at higher risk of dying from COVID-19 than non-smokers. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Head of WHO's Tobacco Control Program, Vinayak Prasad, tells VOA a plethora of scientific studies over the past year confirm smokers face a 50% higher risk of developing severe disease and death from COVID-19.
It's logical because smoking does compromise on the lung function, and this virus does attack the lungs. So that's where the rationale for taking measures to not use tobacco.
The World Health Organization is urging smokers to join its year-long Quit Tobacco campaign, which helps countries scale up their tobacco control services. These include running national awareness campaigns, opening new cessation clinics, and offering nicotine replacement therapies. Prasad says it is of utmost importance to make users aware of the risks they run. He says some 8 million people will die prematurely this year from tobacco-related illnesses, such as cancers, heart disease, and respiratory illnesses. Most of these deaths will occur in low-income countries. He notes it usually takes decades for these deadly illnesses to develop. Therefore, preventing young people from taking up this habit is essential, as they can lead to a lifelong addiction. He accuses the tobacco industry of targeting young people to get them hooked on their products by offering freebies such as tickets to concerts, nicotine pouches, and e-cigarettes. This, he says, has been met with success in many countries. For example, he notes 38% of Indonesia's teenage boys smoke.
Likewise, in European setting, for example, the girls, the women, tobacco use is so high that the male-to-female difference is no longer there. The industry is continuing to reap all of the benefits they can from this divide, getting more and more women to, and targeting the girl child, adolescents, and then continuing to push their products in developing countries.
WHO reports imposing substantial taxes on tobacco products is one of the most effective ways of getting smokers to quit. Other successful smoke reduction measures include a ban on advertisements and promotions, health warnings on tobacco products, and designating areas as smoke-free zones. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Lawmakers aimed kicks, tussled over a ballot box, and shouted at a meeting of the Pan-African Parliament on Monday amid a dispute over electing the AU's body's next president. Olivia Chan with Reuters has more.
She shouldn't fight in the chamber.
African Union lawmakers fought during a parliament meeting in Johannesburg on Monday. The cause of the dispute? The process for electing a new president for the AU's legislative body. Since it was founded in 2004, the Pan-African Parliament has never had a president from Southern Africa. The last two were from West Africa. Lawmakers from West Africa reportedly disagreed with colleagues from Southern Africa over whether the presidency should move around various regions on a rotational basis. Scenes shown on South Africa's national broadcaster SABC show the politicians scuffling over a ballot box and shouting. Before the election was suspended.
That's Olivia Chan of Reuters. Nigerian political observers are expressing concern over the many attacks on the facilities of Nigeria's electoral body, the Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC. INEC officials say the commission has recorded at least 42 attacks on its facilities since the last polls in 2019. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
9 attacks occurred in 2019 and 21 others took place last year. But in the last 4 weeks, 12 more offices of the commission have either been set ablaze or vandalized. The latest incident occurred Sunday in southeastern Imo State. Ballot boxes, voted cubicles, power generators and utility vehicles were destroyed. Election officials are evaluating the extent of the damage, but say an initial assessment shows it could significantly affect their ability to conduct credible elections in the affected places. Political analysts like Jibrin Ibrahim, a senior fellow at the Center for Democracy and Development, agree that attacks on facilities, coupled with Nigeria's general security challenges and separatist calls in two areas, will affect polls.
When some people are saying we want out of the nation, others are saying let's just vote and keep the nation, it becomes a difficult context to ensure that there's a level playing ground for elections.
Officials blame unidentified armed groups and the separatist group Indigenous People of Biafra, or IPOB, for the fresh attacks. IPOB advocates an independent state in a part of Nigeria that tried to break away more than 50 years ago. The government has not commented on the attacks. In recent months, Nigeria has seen an escalation in violence by armed criminal groups, as well as the rising profile of IPOB and another separatist movement in southwestern Nigeria. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has insisted relations with close ally Australia are not going to be hurt by differences over China. The Ardern government has been accused of going soft on Beijing to profit from better trade relations with the East Asian nation. Ardern has been holding annual talks with Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison to discuss trade, security, and the challenges linked to the COVID-19 pandemic. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In the New Zealand skiing and adventure sports resort of Queenstown, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern and her Australian counterpart Scott Morrison have downplayed signs of division over relations with China. Earlier this year, New Zealand said it was uncomfortable using the 70-year-old Five Eyes intelligence grouping, which includes the United States, Britain, Australia and Canada, to criticise China. That was widely interpreted as an attempt by Wellington to avoid damaging its lucrative trading relationship with Beijing. A television news documentary accused New Zealand of abandoning Australia for a fast Chinese buck. New Zealand was reluctant to sign joint statements from its alliance partners, condemning China's crackdown on the pro-democracy movement in Hong Kong and its treatment of its minority Uyghur Muslim population. The declarations have angered China's government. But after annual talks Monday with the Australian Prime Minister, Ardern said she stood in solidarity with her trans-Tasman neighbour.
No point in our discussions today did I detect any difference in our relative positions on the importance of maintaining a very strong and principled perspective on issues around trade, on issues around human rights. And you'll see that Australia and New Zealand have broadly been positioned in exactly the same place on these issues consistently. So I really push back on any suggestion that we are not taking a strong stance on these incredibly important issues.
New Zealand has also indicated it will support Australia in its ongoing trade dispute with China. Tensions between Canberra and Beijing have increased in recent years over geopolitical disputes and allegations of Chinese interference in Australian politics. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Handwritten notes that show one of history's greatest scientific minds in action are going up for auction at Christie's in London. The auctioneer said Tuesday that pages containing Isaac Newton's jotted revisions to his masterwork, the quote, Principia, unquote, are expected to sell on July 8 for between $850,000 and $1.3 million. Newton's, quote, mathematical principles of natural philosophy, unquote, set out the laws of gravitation and motion and is considered a scientific watershed. The page and a half of notes for a planned second edition includes comments and diagrams by Scottish mathematician and astronomer David Gregory. Christie's expert Thomas Venning says the manuscript shows one of the, quote, greatest minds in history, unquote, talking about his greatest achievements. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mark William Barrow, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Gina Dorfo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.